You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
This summer, one of Wall Street's most respected firms, Goldman Sachs, has received some unflattering media attention in the Wall Street Journal, Newsweek, New York Magazine, and the Financial Times. And earlier this summer, a lead article in Rolling Stone described the firm as a great vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity and accused it of rigging every major market bubble since the Great Depression. Earlier this summer, I spoke to Arianna Huffington about this, the updated and expanded edition of her book, Pigs at the Trough, How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America, that's been recently republished. Many listeners responded to that segment, so we thought we'd re-air it again as we head into the Labor Day holiday weekend. But I have to warn you that some of the references are already out of date because, as you know, the political world changes quickly. I started off by noting that we had talked about the original version of the book when it was published in 2003, but that today's economy looks much worse, with most economists predicting that unemployment will top 10%, and in some places it's even higher. Detroit has 22% unemployment. The number of homeless families is on the rise, as is domestic abuse, crime, and gun ownership. And food banks are reporting dramatic shortages. And then I asked her, do you know how many banks have failed so far this year?
Well, this year, 53 so far. And that's why you have that sense that I wanted to capture by updating the book, A, that we've learned nothing from the past, and that we are repeating the mistakes except on a much larger scale. You know, the pigs that I refer to in the book are Enron and WorldCom and Adelphi, and they...
They're all
played,
gone.
They're all gone, but they played with billions of shareholder money. And now we have Goldman Sachs and Citigroup and Merrill Lynch and... all the new culprits playing basically with the trillions of taxpayer wealth.
And they're not going to go under. In fact, as I mentioned, Goldman Sachs, $11.4 billion in bonuses this year, despite the fact that everybody was outraged by all the bonuses that were being given out earlier.
And all that basically would not have been possible were it not for taxpayer bailouts and taxpayer guarantees. You know, even though Goldman Sachs returned the TARP money, they have not returned the money they got through AIG. Remember, that's like a very critical part. You know, we gave AIG $180 billion. Over $10 billion of that went to Goldman Sachs. That was a counterparty. Without any negotiation with the government, they just gave them 100 cents to the dollar, which is like unprecedented. And that is really what is so outrageous, that the government gave $4.7 trillion to Wall Street without strings attached.
So is this more outrageous than the situation that you wrote about in 2003?
Oh, infinitely so.
Do you see any parallels?
I see many parallels. I see a direct line between the accounting gimmicks that brought down Enron, and indeed Arthur Andersen, and Adelphi, and a lot of the other companies we mentioned, and the accounting gimmicks that are continuing now, for example. Like, the watering down of mark-to-market is a central element in the resurgence of what's happening on Wall Street.
But haven't these companies been forced to make adjustments? Goldman Sachs became a bank holding company last year in order to stay alive, and that meant that it has to be regulated now.
Well, it became a bank holding company in order to get the money from the government. And the problem is that as long as these companies are allowed to continue in their current size, they're going to remain too big to fail, and therefore they're always going to be protected by government. That's what needs to change. That's the fundamental issue here. You cannot have institutions that are too big to fail, because that means that the taxpayer is on the hook. If they are too big to fail, they are too big to exist. I mean, that's capitalism. And if we want to save capitalism, we cannot create this hybrid form where losses are socialized and gains are privatized. And you basically have Wall Street welfare queens.
But what happens if some of these companies do fail? I mean, don't an awful lot of people get hurt? A lot more people than were hurt when Enron failed. And that was a there were an awful lot of people who took a huge hit, and it wound up being a lot more widespread than we could have imagined.
But just look how widespread it is right now. You know, the states, as well as what's happening at the federal government level, but the states are at the moment cutting services to the bone. The combined deficit of the states is $166 billion. It's important to put that in perspective. We gave AIG $180 billion. So the opportunity cost of what we've done is enormous. And the cost in human lives, in terms of what you've started describing at the beginning of the show, foreclosures, food banks, homeless shelters being overcrowded, all that is really part of the fallout from the meltdown.
And is California's problem pretty much a result of this as well?
Well, a large part of it. I mean, today we had new numbers that foreclosures in California are now greater than the new home sales. So you have about 10,000 homes being foreclosed every day. Now, we need to stop and imagine the human cost of that, you know, putting flesh and blood on the numbers. In fact, at the Huffington Post, we have a new correspondent that we are calling human impact correspondent, because I don't think there is enough being done to cover the human impact of this recession. And I find it stunning that we have a Newsweek cover this week declaring the recession over. It's as though many people are living in a parallel universe.
Well, they're saying the recession is over, but unemployment rates will continue to climb for a while.
Yes,
and
the
I don't know how we reconcile the two.
Yes, unemployment rates will continue to climb. Foreclosures will grow. Credit card defaults, bankruptcies, healthcare insurance losses. So how do we measure the recession being over? By what's happening in Wall Street?
How much taxpayer money was lost in the corporate corruption of 2003?
Well, you know, that it wasn't so much taxpayer money there. It was really very much shareholder wealth.
So
it was
employees.
And employees, yes. It was 401ks. It was pension plans. I mean, a lot was affected. But by comparison, it was really a very small financial meltdown. And, you know, it's interesting, but I'm amazed by how little we learn from history. And I was recently, a couple of weeks ago, in Pompeii. And the entire city was destroyed by the Vesuvian explosion in 79 AD. And there had been so many warning signs beforehand that were ignored, including earthquakes, birds not singing, water not flowing, dogs running away, and they were all ignored. And I have that same sense of foreboding about all the warning signs that we're ignoring today.
But after the 2003 implosion, new legislation was imposed. And didn't that have any impact at all?
Well, look at what happened to the SEC. Sure, there was Sarbanes-Oxley that was passed. There were new reforms that I mentioned in the book. But the architecture of the system stayed the same. And that's really the key. The repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, for example, which allowed these too-big-to-fail companies to exist. I mean, Glass-Steagall was an essential foundational element of the economy that was created after the collapse before the Second World War.
Well, how did we get to the point where we became so enamored of deregulation?
Well, what's happened is that the same people who, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, it doesn't matter, incidentally. This is not a left-right issue. The same people who are behind the repeal of Glass-Steagall, for example, at the end of the Clinton years, are now in charge of our economic policy. Larry Summers is central to that. He celebrated the kind of the new economy, the new Darwinian economy, as he put it. But in fact, we don't have a Darwinian economy. We don't have an economy where there is creative destruction and only the fittest survive.
No, it's survival of those that we can't allow to fail.
Exactly. And it's also survival of those too well connected to be allowed to fail. And one of the things that I find amazing is that we have the foreclosure situation being made worse because banks lobbied against the cramdown amendment, which would have allowed foreclosures to be averted when there could be more negotiation with the homeowner, when in the many, many cases when the price of their home is now lower than their mortgage.
My guest is Arianna Huffington, who's co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post, and also is a nationally syndicated columnist and the author of 12 books, one of them, Pigs at the Trough, the New York Times bestseller from 2003, now updated and expanded with a whole bunch of new pigs, you say. Subtitle, How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America. It's published by Three Rivers Press, which is a division of Crown. Now, Treasurer, you mentioned Tim Geithner. Tim Geithner and President Obama have expressed concern that executive pay needs to be limited. Has any meaningful legislation been put into place to change the way business or on Wall Street is conducted?
Not fundamentally. You see, there are always going to be some cosmetic reforms.
There are some bills in Congress right
now. Yeah, there are some bills in Congress right now. And Wall Street is lobbying very hard against them, like the Financial Consumer Protection Agency. There's tremendous lobbying being done to undermine it. And they succeeded with the cram-down legislation. They may well succeed with that. It all depends on the public pressure. You know, we are really so dependent on the public being informed, on the public protesting, on the public making it clear they're not going to put up with them, there'll be a price to pay.
Well, we've seen that with health care reform. There was a lot of public pressure years ago to change the system because it wasn't working. That failed. Then everybody said, this time it's definitely going to happen. Barack Obama has made it a key issue in the campaign, and it's a key issue of his presidency. And it looks like there's going to be real problems down the line on this one, too.
Oh, major problems. I have a whole section in the book about the drug industry and how powerful and well-connected it is. And we see the drug industry that had such a huge impact in 2003, including, remember, preventing the exporting of generic AIDS drugs to Africa, which dramatically accelerated the AIDS epidemic there. I mean, that's having blood on your hands. And now the same drug industry is bringing out all its lobbyists, many of them incredibly well-connected, and they're trying to undermine and succeeding in undermining healthcare legislation. I mean, let me tell you some of their successes already. The most commonsensical part of any kind of new bill would be that the government would use its bargaining power to negotiate with the drug industry to bring down prices. I mean, that seems so elementary.
Because it can buy in large quantities.
Exactly. But this is off the table when it comes to the Senate Finance Committee bill. Why? Because six of former Senator Baucus's staffers are central lobbyists lobbying against any real reform.
This is Max Baucus of Montana.
Yes.
He represents America. He represents a state that has, what, 1/100th of the population of this country.
That's right. But he's the chairman of the very powerful Senate Finance Committee. Over 300 former members of Congress and staffers are basically now lobbying against health care reform.
So,
including some of them who are not registered lobbyists, you know, like Tom Daschle, who said that we may have to sacrifice the public option. So, again, it's very important to remember that this is a bipartisan problem. It's not just one party or the other.
Well, you're saying that it's because we rely so much on a system where lobbyists have real impact.
Absolutely.
And if a lobbyist is giving me a lot of money and helping me in my campaign for reelection, I'm going to listen very closely.
Yes, basically, in many cases, allow them to write the law.
My guest is Arianna Huffington. Her book, Pigs at the Trough, How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America, has just been reissued in an updated and expanded edition by Three Rivers Press, which is a division of Crown. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with an interview I conducted earlier this summer with nationally syndicated columnist Arianna Huffington, the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. She was here to discuss an updated and expanded version of her book, Pigs at the Trough, How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America, and we thought that we would air it for you again today as we head into the Labor Day weekend. Been thinking about the Huffington Post because it is where we find out about some of the crazier things that people are thinking about in this country. That you had a really funny thing recently about somebody trying to talk to people who are is part of this movement. What is it called?
The birthers.
The birthers. Who there's so many conspiracies out there right now, and Barack Obama seems to be even more connected to everything evil in the world than the elders of the Protocols of Zion.
But you know what? I blame the media for a lot of that because last night, for example, I was doing the Colbert Show and they had one of the prime movers behind the birther movement on the call. You know, I don't think really she would have in any way felt ill at ease in a lunatic asylum, the stuff she was saying. Now, normally you don't go to the lunatic asylum to pick guests for your show, right? So I think that giving any kind of credence to what they are saying is no different than putting on the show people who think they are Napoleon or a fried egg.
And this is one of the problems that we've had over the years, that we do believe that we have to present both sides. So if there are Holocaust deniers, we have to give them equal time to people who say, I was in Auschwitz.
Yes, and I really think this has been one of the main problems with media.
We have flat earthers, and Yes. They should be given equal time with people who say the earth is round.
I feel that once we accept that there is truth, there is verifiable truth. There is a lot that we don't have the absolute truth on, but there is also a lot that we do. The flat earth is a very good example. We don't actually have flat earthers on any serious or even pretending to be serious show, but we do have people who deny the existence of global warming, for example. We've given them credence for a long time, and we have birthers. And I really honestly think that any serious show should never have a birther on.
And we have people who are saying that the system that we have now in place, getting back to your book, is actually okay. It's going through a correction. And we shouldn't do anything. We should not enact new laws. There should be no new regulation.
I know. But what's worse than that is that not only do we have people saying that, we have people in the administration listening to them. And
why do you think that is? I mean, here we have Barack Obama. If I read some of my email and read things in the Huffington Post that you're dealing with, he is some wild-eyed communist Muslim jihadist. And then I look at what's coming out of the White House, and it seems to me to be about as middle of the road as anybody could ever have expected. So there are people on the left who are quite upset, as upset with him as people on the right.
You know what? Honestly, I think that we need to stop looking at what's happening in American politics in terms of right versus left, because that becomes a trap. The need for healthcare reform, for example, is not a left-wing issue. You know, you have over 70% of Americans who want healthcare reform. You have many business people who want healthcare reform. Outrage at Goldman Sachs is not a left-right issue. I wrote a blog recently where I quoted an editorial and an op-ed on the same day in the Wall Street Journal that I would have been very happy to write and sign myself. And they were against Goldman Sachs. They were even asking for a tax on bailout money and bailout fees. So I think that there are people who simply want to save a responsible free market system, who recognize that the way we're going is really going to be the downfall of the system.
Well, what kinds of protection should we put into place? Would you like to see a whole bunch of new regulations put into place, or should we just simply bring back Glass-Steagall?
Well, absolutely, we should bring back some form of Glass-Steagall, obviously updated to recognize that we're living in a 21st century economy. But absolutely, because that also will make it easier to avoid creating institutions that are too big to fail, and instead have institutions that succeed when they succeed and fail when they fail without getting the taxpayer on the hook.
Would you have liked to have seen General Motors fail?
Well, you know, General Motors was a different situation because it had to do with jobs. You see, the thing about Wall Street is that originally TARP was sold to us as a way to get lending flowing again. Do you remember all those promises that credit will start flowing again? Well, that didn't happen. The president himself acknowledged it didn't happen. And not only that, but now we can't even get an answer from them as to what they did with the money. You know, we have speculation about what they did with the money, and Tim Geithner has told us that it's not possible to find out, which is kind of absurd.
What about all of those people who lost so much money from their retirement funds because of what happened at the stock market? Now, of course, earlier the Bush administration had tried to suggest a Social Security system that was tied to the stock market, and many people said, well, the market is volatile. It could go down. We were assured that that wouldn't happen. Who knows what would have occurred if that law had passed?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that you can't even imagine what the cost of that would have been. But now, I mean, we have a lot of people who've lost their retirement savings at the very time when they can't get back into the job market.
And how many years do you think it'll take for that money to return, or will it ever return?
Well, it all depends on what happens to the real economy. That's where the emphasis should be. What is actually going to jumpstart the real economy so that we can have jobs back, so that we can have people being able to keep their homes? Because when you don't have jobs, everything else is like a domino effect.
Well, we are still exporting our industries to other countries. And so aren't the jobs now mostly in the service area and I guess in high tech?
There's also so much that could be done to create a real green economy. There are so many green jobs that would be available. And one of the problems is that the stimulus bill that passed Congress was not really enough. I mean, there were a lot of tax cuts in it, and there were some pork projects. And as Warren Buffett said, it's like somebody taking half a Viagra pill. You know, it just did not do the job. And so we are now in a situation where everything has been delayed. So if there is more effect to come from the stimulus bill, which I'm sure there is, it's not happening fast enough.
My guest is Arianna Huffington. Her book, Pigs at the Trough, has been updated and expanded with a whole bunch of new pigs, and is now being published in paperback by Three Rivers Press, which is a division of Crown. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Would you argue that most of the greed is located on Wall Street, or should the blame be spread far and wide to other countries? Because haven't we seen scandals in British-connected stock groups,
yes,
companies, for example, in Hong Kong, Singapore, and elsewhere?
When we have seen scandals, you know, across the board, because our global economy is so interconnected. Remember, in fact, the AIG department that was responsible for the worst part of the meltdown was in London. So it's not like we are particularly vile or greedy. But what's happening here is that during the Bush years, there was such a disrespect for any kind of regulation. That, remember, so many people were fired from the SEC, and the SEC spent its time prosecuting Martha Stewart and letting Bernie Madoff get away with what he was doing. In fact, Bernie Madoff gave an interview in North Carolina, in the jail where he's at yesterday, to the lawyers that are trying to get some of the money back. And he said that he couldn't believe that the SEC had not caught him yet. So another kind of little irony is that some of the pigs that I refer to in the book from 2003, John Rieger specifically and his son from Adelphia, are in the same jail now with Bernie Madoff. And you can just imagine that reality show of Bernie Madoff and John Rieger having a cup of coffee in that same jail. You know, what they did is kind of so different in some ways, you know, in the sense that, sure, John Rieger defrauded the shareholders, but look at what Bernie Madoff did.
But these people committed real crimes. What about the people at Goldman Sachs, at Merrill Lynch, at AIG? Did they do anything illegal?
Well, that is really the problem. And as Michael Kinsley said, the real problem is not what is illegal, but what is legal. Because of the accounting gimmicks, because of the way people can hide behind complexity. So you have these very, very complex derivatives they were trading on. But it's not clear if there was anything illegal there, and very likely there wasn't.
And then there were the excesses, which you wrote about in 2003. The excesses we heard about this time had to do with incredibly huge bonuses, and it has been argued by some that if you hire somebody to be your CEO and you pay him or her $1 million, that there's no need to give many more millions in bonuses. On the other hand, others argue that there should be incentives that would be paid off for improving the company's situation.
Well, right now we have distorted incentives. We have incentives for short-term gain that are not balanced by incentives for long-term gain. And when people can make an enormous amount of money in the short term when the company is very profitable, that's not balanced with them giving back the money when the profits disappear.
Many people are concerned about the fact that people under 30 are pretty much running Washington. It doesn't matter whether the Democrats are in power or the Republicans. But it was reported yesterday in the Washington Post that you personally hired David Axelrod's son to be the editor of the Denver edition of HuffPost. He's 22 years old.
Oh, yes, but I'm definitely by far the oldest person at the Huffington Post. If you come to our office, and I hope you'll come one day in Soho, you'll see that our editors are largely in their 20s. So online media is very much a young person's business.
And the fact that he is David Axelrod's son was not a reason that you hired him?
Absolutely not. You know, we interviewed a lot of people. He produced a mock-up for the Denver section. You know, his vision was creative, intelligent, and he's working very hard to get it launched in September. And, you know, there are people whose parents are in positions of power or great responsibility. I don't think that they should be in any way not allowed to get on with their own lives.
Getting back to your book, in 2003, the feeling when we talked about it was that, okay, we've taken care of that problem. And here we are now, 2009, and the feeling is, well, we're taking care of this problem.
Exactly.
Do you imagine a new, updated, and expanded edition in 2013?
I'm afraid I do. I just feel that right now we're having a victory dance on top of the same shaky financial system.
And why aren't we learning from this?
Well, I read a book recently by J.K. Galbraith called A Short History of Financial Euphoria, which really explains why, going back to the tulip mania, mm-hmm. we have a real problem learning. It's like we are so quick to want to move back to a kind of risky business as usual. And there's something in our DNA, it appears, that makes us not want to be realistic about what is happening, except this time it's really bad.
Well, many people have blamed Bernie Madoff's victims for their plight because they said, well, they should have recognized that it's impossible to have gains through good times and bad times. But that's part of this whole situation. It's not just Bernie Madoff's victims. It's pretty much the whole society, you're saying. We all like, you know, there were people who believed that housing prices could never go down.
Right. It's when news is too good to be true. We are fine with that. You know, it's like we want to believe that it is actually true. But right now, there is also a great opportunity for a reset. There is a great opportunity, you know, as Rahm Emanuel said, not to let this crisis go to waste. And make changes both at the collective level and at the personal level. Already people are making big changes when it comes to saving, which is bad news for the economy, but good news for us personally, because definitely there was a consumption gone amok. You know, I don't think, though, we'll be able to really get to a new level without resetting our values, too. I mean, there is a tremendous emphasis in this White House on service, for example, which I think is very important. There is a site called All for Good that was created by Google and is being used by government to bring together supply and demand so that people begin to give back. And especially in times like that, that's going to be more and more necessary because clearly government isn't going to be enough.
Although the real issue is whether this will have any kind of lasting impact. We've had warnings in the past and adjustments.
We've ignored them, yeah.
We had them during Jimmy Carter's presidency. We had them during Ronald Reagan's presidency. We had the Depression, which was the greatest lesson of all, and yet here we are again.
But, you know, that's what is so interesting, that after the Depression, a lot was set in place to prevent something like that, including the Glass-Steagall Act. So it was the dismantling of that system that was put in place, and was put in place very successfully, that is the outrage.
Arianna Huffington's book, Pigs at the Trough, How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America, is now available in an updated and expanded edition from Three Rivers Press, which is a division of Crown. And I want to thank you so much for being with us
again. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Pregnancy can take some women by surprise. Up next, Alice Eve Cohn explains why she was shocked when the stomach pains that she'd been diagnosed with as a tumor turned out to be a baby. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.